And then just let yourself come back. Keep a glidey sense in yourself tonight. There's so much to say, I don't even know where to begin. Well, let's start with the Dharma of speech. Speak only that which is kind, true, necessary, and at the appropriate time. And I forget if it was last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember when we talked about it. Claude and I have been talking about it's not just speech, it's everything. It's action. It's everything. It's how we speak. It's how we act. It's how we speak to ourselves. It's how we speak to others. It's how we act towards ourselves. It's how we act towards others. It's how we move through life. It's everything. Everything we ever need to know is completely contained in this one very simple teaching. Kind, true, necessary, and at the appropriate time. And if we can really be that, embody that, really, really be and embody that, which is a very fierce practice, because in order to apply it only to speech, kind, true, necessary, and at the appropriate time, that probably eliminates at least 75% of most conversation. And I don't think that would be a bad thing, because I think most conversation is just people discharging their anxiety all over each other. And it would be so much better to hold that inside of ourselves. And not just anxiety, just all the projections, assumptions, all the stuff of that ego dance that is so bloody boring. It is a boring with a capital B. And so yoga anyway is all about creating this container that can really hold all the shakti, all the consciousness that we are. And we really need to zip it up in order to do that. And one of the first things to zip up is very good to zip up the mouth. Because if you really pay attention to yourself, you will notice, well, that's a fun exercise. Take a day and notice how much of what you say actually needed to be said. And I think you'll be shocked. I had it happen to me today, and I think of myself as pretty much embodying this. I was here putting together the new cushions, and some of the people who work here popped in. So I ended up getting into a conversation with one of the massage therapists here who was interested in meditation. And I couldn't just leave it alone, you know? I had to go into my whole rant against whatever. It doesn't really matter, but I was just like, what are you doing? God, just shut up. It's never too late to practice or early. Probably everybody knows who bothers to read the Monday night class emails. I became interested in this book that I don't know if it's new or not so new, but it's a kind of a business pop psychology kind of book that's called The 48 Laws of Power. And somebody told me about it, whatever, it doesn't really matter how it came to me. But I was sort of intrigued because it did seem to me, although it's extraordinarily, I think it's not an ethical system that I have any interest in practicing. If you go to the deeper levels of it, it's Patanjali Yoga Sutra. It's really the Yoga Sutra 101. And it's also the Dharma of speech. It really is yoga, but it's yoga sort of being co-opted and turned into a way to have power over other people, which obviously I have a problem with. But I thought it might be interesting to bring it to class so we can unpack it to find what's actually incredibly applicable to the kinds of questions that we contemplate here. But I'm not quite ready to bring it in because I need to spend more time with it. But for example, I think the third law, which of course the book is so big I couldn't bear to carry it in tonight, but it's something about basically say as little as possible, which is the Dharma of speech. Now, from his perspective, it's say as little as possible so people never know, what you're doing, and then you always have the one over them, and blah, 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 which is whatever. I mean, I have a problem with that. However, there is tremendous wisdom in saying as little as possible. There is tremendous wisdom in practicing the Dharma of speech. And he does tell this kind of wonderful story that I did bring in. This was another example tonight. I was one of those rare moments because I was here earlier, so I set the whole room up, so I didn't have to come in as early as I usually do. But my whole mind-body system is so programmed to, like, leave the house at 7:20 that even though I didn't really have to leave the house until 7:35, I had nothing to, I was done at 7:20. So then I thought, but the books, I had these two heavy books, I was like, ugh. So I thought, let me photocopy them. But my copying machine, I'm so mad at this machine. So right there, I'm really mad at this machine. It used to be great. It doesn't work well anymore. If I didn't have so much ink on hand, I would buy a new one, but it's so expensive. I hate the thought of having to toss all this ink. So I'm forcing myself to use it. But it just, it doesn't print well anymore, and it's really slow, and it's lost its Shakti. So here I am, just trying to make these two copies, which, of course, it turned out it was me who wasn't pushing the right buttons, but never mind about that. I was really getting aggravated. Not, like, majorly aggravated, but I was just like, and I was just, like, saying to the machine, I hate you. And then I realized, okay, you're going to class, you're going to be talking about the Dharma of speech. Look at yourself. You need to love the machine. So I just chilled out, and everything was fine. And it would behave much better.
Take a picture of the page.
That's right. I always forget that. You see, because I'm 70 years old, and I come from another time. And I forget that I can just take a picture. I know people do that all the time. They come for sessions, and then I want to give them their notes, and I say, should I make you a PDF? Oh, it's fine. I'll take a picture. And I'm like, duh. Right. I didn't think of it. So here we go. But I got to see what a hypocrite I am. But that was very good. And then I had the opportunity to practice loving the printer. And it was good because I could love it and hate it all rolled into one, which is what we talk about all the time. And my love was so much bigger than the hatred that it could contain the hatred. And it did make me very nice copies. So here's a story. Here is a story from the 48 Laws of Power that goes like this. This is an example of practicing what we would call the Dharma of speech. Now, in this story, it's going to end up bringing money. In our case, it's going to end up bringing the wealth of the self. But it's okay to have money come on that way. It's okay. We just can't make that be the object because then we get attached. And then when it doesn't come, we get upset. Right? There's nothing wrong with wealth, but there's a lot wrong with attachment to it. Okay, so here's the story. Down on his luck, the screenwriter Michael Arlen went to New York in 1944, down on his luck. To drown his sorrows, he paid a visit to the famous Restaurant 21. In the lobby, he ran into Samuel Goldwyn, who offered the somewhat impractical advice that maybe he should buy racehorses. At the bar, Arlen then met Louis B. Mayer, an old acquaintance, who asked him what his plans were for the future. Because remember, he's a screenwriter down on his luck. So Arlen says to Mayer, oh, I was just talking to Sam Goldwyn. And he doesn't say any more because Mayer interrupts him. How much did he offer you? He interrupts. So Arlen says, not enough. So then Mayer says, would you take $15,000 for 30 weeks? And Arlen said, yes. And so that's a very worldly example of what happens when we practice the Dharma of speech. You see, you speak only that which is kind and necessary, right? Appropriate time. So it's a very, very good practice. And we know this. We've been talking about it for years. So as I was gathering my thoughts and gathering readings, so then, okay, we're all devastated, shocked, blown out. I don't even have adjectives for people like us, our response to the Kavanaugh debacle. I'm not even going to call it hearings. Debacle. And so I'm sitting there tonight and I'm thinking, all right, you're going to go in there and talk about the Dharma of speech. And you're going to talk about how we really want to embody these ways of being. And this is really the way to have mastery in our lives. And we want to develop mastery because it just makes life easier and happier and better. And we make more of a contribution and it's just, it's all good. And then I'm thinking, and this totally adharmic, not practicing one iota of the Dharma of speech, just went through that whole Senate hearing, and this lovely woman tells this despicable story in a kind of Dharma of speechy kind of a way, And she gets completely trashed by all these, I would call them Neanderthals, but that I think is not nice to Neanderthals, extremely primitive people. Extremely primitive humans. They are human beings, but they're so primitive, they're barely human. But they have power. And so this monster sails through. And so as I was thinking about sitting, I'm thinking, all right, so where does the Dharma of speech fit in this? I mean, clearly, this guy's going to be on the Supreme Court. He just got the greatest job, the greatest job security job, unless things happen, but we don't know what's going to happen. And to get it, he was arrogant, he was nasty, he was mean, he lied. He did all the things that are the antithesis of the Dharma of speech. And so right now in our face, we have this living example of a way to be successful in the world that goes against everything that every teaching that we've ever sat with in this class is about. And I was really wrestling with that for a while today. And I encourage everybody to wrestle. I mean, ultimately, we know we don't do these practices to become Supreme Court justices. We don't do these practices to become president. We don't do these practices to become successful or powerful in the world. That's not why we do them. If those kinds of fruits accrue to us, it's very nice to do these practices so we can actually be an amazing, wonderful person who actually just infuses their work and their contribution to the country and the culture and the planet with love and compassion and wisdom. I mean, that's why we do these practices. And I thought, but as I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, this is a time when it's easy to lose heart because we've been doing these practices. I mean, I've been doing these practices for 40 years. My entire adult life has been in one way, shape, or form devoted to trying to make this earth a better place. And I look around me and it's like, I have failed. I have failed. And what I thought I was doing, no. And hope springs eternal, and who knows what will happen tomorrow? We don't know. But I thought, so why do we practice? And at a time like this, like, and I just always come back to, we practice because whatever is coming down the pipe, we're going to need to be more and more deeply connected to the self. If we don't have a ground inside of ourself, if we don't have an anchor inside of ourself, and everybody in this room knows the only way we get there is to clear out all the psycho-emotional debris that keeps us from being really rooted in the depth of our being. And if we don't do that work 24/7, then we're going down. Tara and the ship are not taking us. We're going down because it is so challenging. I mean, I flipped out with my, well, I didn't really flip out, but I definitely had a moment with my printer tonight. And if I'm going to have a moment with my printer, does that make me any better than Brett Kavanaugh yelling at senators? I don't think so. Maybe a little bit because I at least have the awareness to know. But you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying, and I think, so that's all I have to say. So I'm going to read you. So I just felt like the Tao Te Ching. So I jumped over the couple of verses from where we left off in the summer, and this one is so beautiful. But actually, first I'm going to read you a Mary Oliver that I think also so beautifully embodies what Dharma of speech, like why we do these practices, what this is about, and why we would want to practice the Dharma of speech. And again, the Dharma of action, the Dharma of how to really be in the world if we want to attain the luminosity that if I believe in one thing still, every belief I have has been taken away from me except that one, that inside of us there is this tremendous ground of luminosity and wisdom and real power, not the yucky kind, the real kind that is a life-affirming, life-enhancing, life-nurturing power. That's the power I believe in. So listen to this poem. It's just one verse within a larger piece where she's actually commenting on Psalms from the Bible. So it's a little got some Christian language. And it goes like this. I know a man of such mildness and kindness, it is trying to change my life. He does not preach, teach, but simply is. He does not preach, teach, but simply is. It is astonishing, for he is Christ's ambassador truly by rule and act, but more, he is kind, with the sort of kindness that shines out, but is resolute, not fooled. That to me is such a definition of what we are working on in ourselves. He is kind with the sort of kindness that shines out, but is resolute, not fooled. It's not that cotton candy kind of loosey-goosey, nicey-nicey, sugar plum fairy goodness. It's not that at all. It's the kindness that shines out, but is resolute, not fooled. He has eaten the dark hours, and it's eating those dark hours that allows us to shine, but be resolute. He has eaten the dark hours and could also, I think, soldier for God, riding out under the storm clouds against the world's pride and unkindness with both unassailable sweetness and consoling words. He is kind with the sort of kindness that shines out, but is resolute, not fooled. He has eaten the dark hours and could also, I think, soldier for God, riding out under the storm clouds against the world's pride and unkindness with both unassailable sweetness and consoling word. That is an embodiment of the Dharma of speech. Here's verse 21 from Tao Te Ching. The master keeps her mind always at one with the Tao. That is what gives her radiance. The Tao is ungraspable. How can her mind be one with it? Because she doesn't cling to ideas. The Tao is dark and unfathomable. How can it make her radiant? Because she lets it. Since before time and space were, the Tao is. It is beyond is and is not. How do I know this is true? I look inside myself and see. How do I know this is true? I look inside myself and see. So there are some lovely teachings for us this evening. And let us chant. I think during this time of darkness, political time of darkness, maybe until the midterm elections, I want to be sure to always do the Nivarna mantra. Om. Aim. Hrim. Klim. Chamundaye. Viche. Namaha. Om. Aim. Hrim. Klim. Chamundaye. Viche. Namaha. Om. Aim. Hrim. Klim. Chamundaye. Viche. Namaha. I mean, there's so much more. I've been thinking it's very rich time for contemplation. I'll say that. And, you know, for so many years, I've had a way of talking about my understanding of the way things go that uses terms like patriarchy. And, you know, for years I've thought that word patriarchy was so loaded, and I really have tried to find new language. And sometimes I succeed and sometimes I don't. But if ever we are living in patriarchy, it is here. And this is patriarchy on steroids. And it makes me think that what I've been talking about for years, which I thought wasn't relevant anymore, is more relevant than ever. And I'll just say one thing. I mean, I'm actually toying with the idea of writing something about this, although it's so controversial that I would probably get really slammed. But because what we've just witnessed in these hearings, we have witnessed a patriarchal attack of the Me Too movement, right? I mean, that's what just happened.
Yes.
And Which really got me thinking, like, I have been uneasy about the Me Too movement for a lot of reasons, which I'm not going to go into right now. But what I realized today is, yes, because the Me Too movement used patriarchal tactics. So they did exactly what, because that's the problem. That's the problem with, we are also formed in patriarchy, that even when we think we're being, you know, in the case of women, you know, liberated women, we're still behaving with a patriarchal impulse. And so if you think about the way the feminine works, the feminine doesn't make a lot of noise. It works underground. And it's much more intelligent than making a big fuss and drawing a lot of attention to itself and getting everybody all riled up and delighting and bringing people down. That's not the way of the feminine. That's a patriarchal action. And I realized today, oh my God, the Me Too movement, actually, if we think of like the way that these ginormous energies move, it's like that Me Too movement was actually a very patriarchal response to horrible stuff that's been going on. I mean, nothing in praise of what's been going on, but the way of addressing it has given us this horrific backlash. And it's really, I think it's really important for all of us to really sit with this and really think about the deeper meaning of this and really, at least within ourselves, really resolve to continue weeding out any patriarchal tendencies inside of ourselves. We want the masculine, we want the sacred masculine, the sacred masculine, the pure masculine is wonderful, but we cannot have this patriarchal, bloated, completely dissociated and uber powerful force field, basically slowly destroying the planet. Literally. I mean, you heard the news today. You see what the UN report said. I mean, it's really serious. So anyway, that is my little political rant for tonight. But I think it's very, very important because, and again, so as we know, the Kali family of mantras, are, and this, especially this one, the Navarna mantra, is the most fierce mantra of the constellation of Kali mantras. And as I've said for so many years, and I really do think, the only thing that can balance that out of balance masculine is a very, very strong feminine, and that is Kali. And so I think, in homage to that, I think I want to do the Navarna mantra every week. So we'll chant the Navarna mantra just a few times, maybe just seven, maybe one for each chakra, and then we'll do Om Namah Shivaya to sort of chill everybody out after all this ranting, and then we'll sit for a bit. In fact, let's do a unison. And yeah, we'll do one for each chakra, so bring your awareness down to the root chakra and start there. Marim Klim Chamundaye Vijaya Namaha. Om Marim Klim Chamundaye Vijaya Namaha. Om Marim Klim Chamundaye Vijaya Namaha. Chamundaye Vichye Namaha. So let us sit for a while and let yourself go wherever your inner being wants to travel and really rest there. Rest in your own light, rest in your own majesty, rest in your own wisdom, rest in your own amazingness, rest in your own wonder. Rest in your breath and allow yourself to really glide into the depths of your own light, the depths of your own kindness. Find all the places inside of you that are just absolutely inspired and kindness and truth, and let all those places just grow bigger and bigger and bigger until they fill every cell.